Okay, everyone, I think it's 2 minutes past the hour, so we should probably make a start. Christina, can you give us a list of those present and apologies?
Sure. From the CCNSO, we have Martin Boyle, Becky Burr, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Eberhard Lisser, Hollis Miranda, Patricia Probleta, Nigel Roberts, and Dottie Sparks DeBlanc.
Morning, Christina.
Morning, Bernie. From liaisons, we have Maureen Hilliard and Cheryl Langdon Orr, I think, has connected. Has she? Or she will in a minute.
You don't have Cheryl yet. She's sitting right next to me and currently is not connected, Christina.
Okay, we're working on it.
Not a worry.
From staff support and advisors, we have Jaap Eckerhuis, Bart Boswinkel, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcotte. And apologies from Desiree Milosevic and Stephen Deerhick. That's all.
Okay. Anyone else received any further apologies? If not, I think we can confirm the agenda unless anyone's got any objections. It was on the list for a few days and nobody raised anything on this. So we'll proceed on that basis. Can we have confirmation of the meeting notes from the 29th of November and showing how long ago it is since we met? But those meeting notes have been circulated, I think, three times to the list. So does anyone have any issues that aren't otherwise covered on the agenda? If not, can we... I thought agenda-wise we might move to the new document that Becky and others have been working on over recent weeks. So, Bernie, do you want to take us through the analysis document and see how we go on a piece-by-piece approach to it?
Yes, sir. All right, let's get that document up. Oops, I'm not a... okay, now I'm a presenter.
I'm sorry, that code is not recognized. Don't worry about it. Hi there, am I in the call? Yes, I seem to be in the call. Yay!
It's much too large.
All right, so my speaker was off for a few minutes when I started the call. I missed the introduction to this document. I think following our last... few meetings and discussions around the text. There was obviously some problem for some people understanding how we were proceeding. And Becky had a desire for a long time to restructure the text because to her lawyer's mind it didn't work properly as opposed to my engineering type mind, which I had to agree with. I mean, you know, this the origin of the document was our standard divide and conquer approach and was never meant to be final text. It was meant to be an aid in us understanding the sub-elements so we could get to something.
My problem was actually that I didn't have a long enough attention span.
So basically after some work over the last few weeks, Becky was kind enough to actually take it on and rewrite it. So as far as I'm concerned, the overall thrust of the document or meaning of the interpretations we're presenting has not really changed. And it's really about how to present it and make it more sensible for everyone. So let's go to it. Any other comments before I start going through this, Becky?
Nope.
Anybody else?
I think Nigel has commented in the chat that in 5.1.1 and 5.1.2 should be in the present tense. So we note that when we get to it.
Right, okay. So, revocation, our favorite topic of discussion for the last 8 months. We start by formal actions by IANA contractor, section 5.1. RFC 1591 identifies three formal mechanisms available to the IANA contractor: delegation, transfer, and revocation. The FOI working group has interpreted delegation to mean, and we haven't done that yet, the FOI working group interpreted RFC 1591 to require the consent of an incumbent manager to any transfer of a CCTLD. We have done, published, etc. 5.1.3, the working group interprets the term revocation to refer to the process by which the IANA contract manager rescinds responsibility for management of a CCTLD from an incumbent. 5.1.4, one assumes a CCTLD manager engaged in substantial misbehavior or persistent problems in the operation of a CCTLD is unlikely to consent to the transfer. In the event informal efforts to address problems are unavailing, the only formal mechanism available to IANA, the IANA contractor, to deal with intractable problems is revocation. So that's our section 5.1 that restates all the things we had in that original section 5 dealing with revocation. Are there questions, comments? We have Nigel's chat comments to be in the presence. And we have Martin. Over to
Martin.
Sorry, me or Nigel?
Martin.
Okay. Just a little question. Firstly, the title has changed. I'm not particularly fussed. It's just that it might feel a little bit more comfortable to know where this section is going to. Secondly, I'm assuming that this Section 5 replaces all the existing Section 5 up to and including Section 5.3. And then on this formal actions by the IANA contractor for the 5.1, I'm left a sort of little bit unsure as to exactly what 5.1.4 really means, because the only formal mechanism available to the IANA contractor, the paper that the informal paper that we discussed at an earlier meeting covered separately the role of the GAC principles, and what I'm hearing, I think, is that the IANA contractor is being separated. Essentially the conditions in RSC 1591 is being separated completely in 5.1, which almost then implies that 5.4, which is something we haven't discussed yet, isn't included in this analysis.
Ernie, do you want me to take a shot at that?
Becky, yes, please.
So I think that the title is something that can be fixed. It was, but I do think that you're right. It's to replace the Section 5 text up to 5 through 5.3. The I don't think that there's additional, like, formal role. I mean, this the sort of the formal, the concept of a formal role was something that was in our last version. It didn't really talk about it in that way. It said basically the RFC 1591 mentions these three things. And so all that was meant to do was capture that while there are lots of other, and we get to that later, you know, stepping in, trying to work with the all of that, just from a formal role, RFC 1591 creates these three distinct operations. I have to confess I didn't go back to the GAC principles, but I don't recall an additional, you know, sort of function or authority being referenced there.
Thanks, Vicky. Did that answer the question? Assuming it did, Martin. And Nigel now has his hand raised. So, Nigel.
Hello, thanks. Sorry, I missed what you say because I got this woman in my ear saying your line has been unmuted, so I didn't know you'd called on me. Was that correct, you called on me?
I did. You had your hand raised. And
yes, that was very quick. Thanks. Good timing. From reading the discussion in the chat, I think we do have an issue that we need to issue about the introduction of the word IANA contractor, because that is a modern term, and as Kim rightly said in the chat, it makes the document not interpret the original document, but ties it to the current position, which might not be the position in 5 years' time. And it certainly appears to import the NTIA contract into the interpretation of something which, quite frankly, in 1994 was not in view. I'd really like to make this more general and more objective. I understand Eberhardt has an objection to the use of the term IANA to mean John Postel or ICANN or whatever. And I don't know if there's a way to finesse that, but I do know in IO design against four named individuals that IANA was defined as being those four individuals on the date of, in 1996 of that case. So can we try and do something that's helpful? We know what we're talking about. We don't want to be distracted by the fact whether we call it somebody objects to the use of the word IANA or somebody else objects to the word IANA contractor. Can we sort of take this out altogether and say, formal actions, and that's it. RFC 1591 identified three formal mechanisms that are available: delegation, transfer, and revocation. And try and finesse this in the English.
Yeah, I think Eberhardt's suggesting why not use the text from the contract, which
I object to that.
I assume that means the NTIA contract.
I totally object to that.
Yeah.
Because the contract did not exist in 1994.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand the issue, though.
Keith.
But Keith, anyway,
Keith.
Can, yes.
Keith, it's Chris, and I'm not on Adobe, and I'm in the middle of sitting outside a function here in Sydney, so I apologise if there's any noise. Can I just say, I understand Nigel's point, I understand Eberhardt's point, I understand Martin's point. I recommend that what we do is that we put definitional issues, and I would put whether we use the term IANA or IANA contractor, whatever it is, into the definitional issues, what is meant by IANA in RFC 1591 and so on, aside to deal with in when we get to the definition section of this report, which I believe we put back to the end, and try and concentrate on the actual the actual stuff that we're saying, rather than worrying ourselves right now about the term. So in UN terms, what we would do is put square brackets around the term IANA contractor and just get back to it when we need to.
Okay, I think that was exactly what I was going to suggest, and I think it is quite important to try and deal with the spirit of what's in front of us rather than getting hung up on individual words and phrases. So I think we could take that approach and come back and redefine later. I think we all have a fairly clear understanding of what we mean by the term in the current context as well. Eberhard has his hand raised, so Eberhard.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't bring this up, so I don't think for me it's a big issue. I just thought when we were talking, it's distracting from the main effort. We must just find a way of how we call it and do this consistently for the whole report. I don't really care what we use, but IANA at the moment is a function. With regards to what Martin was saying, if he doesn't understand what 5.1.5.1.4 means, I understand it to mean that it assumes that the CCTLD manager engaged in substantial misbehavior or persistent problems will probably not consent to a voluntary transfer if he has not responded adequately to assistance to fix the problems. That's what it means, and I understand it quite well, actually.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard, and hopefully Martin's deriving some clarification as well. Okay, there are no further questions, so Martin, did you derive some satisfaction from the discussion?
Not desperately. I think that there's a hanging question there because we haven't got through to considering 5.4, and the overview paper, which starts off by referring to national law, in my mind would apply an additional formal mechanism, and not just the sort of limited one that is there at the moment, but I'm not sure I know what it is.
Okay. Oh well, shall we continue in the interim? Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. We'll move on to 5.2. And just as a slight reference to Martin, we haven't rewritten the entire revocation document. We were just trying to address this subsection. I'm sure you'll have objections on other things. Revocation for persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain. 5.2.1, RFC 1591 requires the designated manager to operate the domain, which involves assigning domain names, delegating subdomains, and operating name servers with technical competence, including keeping the central IR, in the case of top-level domains, or other higher-level domain manager advised of the status of the domain, responding to requests in a timely manner, operating the database with accuracy, robustness, and reliance, and maintaining a primary and a secondary name server that have IP connectivity to the internet and can easily be easily checked for operational status and database accuracy by the IR and IANA. So that's section 5.2.1. We'll take questions if there are any, but this is basically a distillation of what is actually in section 5 of RFC, 3.5 of RFC 1591, just restated for practical purposes. Any questions?
Martin has a phrase.
Just a simple question that this specifically refers to section 3.5 of RFC 1591. and it would seem to me that it would be useful to make that reference. Secondly, we're putting 3.5 discussion before we do 3.4 discussion. I've got no problems with that, but it's because of that reversal of order that I think we probably need to make clear reference to that which is in where it is in RSC 1591.
Fair comment. Thanks, Martin. Eberhard.
For the purposes of pedantry, can we maybe put quotes of whatever documents, including RSC, into quotation marks?
Oh, so you're saying yes, we can, but from RSC 1591 that the quote goes into italics or inverted commas?
So we know the point is that they're not exactly direct quote. It makes it just easier to read. Because in the first, in 521, there is some quotes, whereas then including in the paragraph there is no quote. So to make it sure, if it's a direct quote, we don't have to argue about what it means or what it says, because if we know it's a direct quote, and that's the way it's written. If it just makes it more clear, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Okay.
Both good suggestions, and we can do that. That's not a problem.
Okay. There doesn't appear to be any... Patricio has his hand raised. So, Patricio.
Yeah. I know we're just quoting from the RFC 1591, but I'm not sure I understand how the database accuracy requirement is currently interpreted and if it is checked at all by Ayana. Perhaps this is a question for Kim. How is that currently interpreted?
Kim, would you care to respond? Kim, we had one word from you and then you disappeared, so not sure whether the word was no.
I interpreted it to mean yes.
Okay. Thanks, Eberhard.
Can I say?
It's probably disconnected.
Yeah, Nigel, please.
Okay. In RSC 1591, the database means the zone file. We must be very careful, even though it's only 20 years, not to reinterpret archaic terms in a modern light. We may, at some point in part rest of it, make recommendations as to something that might happen going forward, but it's very clear, because I was there, that operating the database meant operating the zone file database with the NS records inserted, because registries did not use databases until around the mid-90s to generate their own files. They just went in and edited them by hand.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, Patricia again. Just to clarify, I understand that the term database was not used in a technical meaning and nothing to do with the relational databases or anything of that sort. Just the contents of the zone file, and my doubt is how can that be checked at all for accuracy by Ayana without access to the zone file?
Patricio, if I may, the answer to that question is 5.2.1.1. It was an obligation on the manager to tell the Ayana what it was doing. As far as I can tell. I mean, I don't want to go into the pedantry section and interpret the words central IR, but I believe central IR meant the Internic as run by, in my time, Network Solutions and before that SRI. The central IR was supposed to receive occasional updates. There was a guy called Dwayne Stone at Network Solutions that we dealt with back in the day. other people will probably remember him. I don't think it means I aren't supposed to be checking that gov.gg has the right name servers or the right admin content.
Yeah,
Keith, it's Chris. I'd like a turn when you have a second, thanks.
Yeah, sure. Chris, go ahead.
Well, I take Patricia's points valid, and so is Nigel's, but here's the risk. If we take a static view of what the words meant 20 years ago, then we leave ourselves open to having a court interpret it in modern times. It would be much better, in my view, for us to interpret it in the times that we exist now, as to obviously it means the following, whatever that may be. We can talk about that later. But to take a purely static view of what it was 20 years ago isn't in our best interests, because it will leave it open to others who don't understand this stuff to make the interpretation. It behooves us, I think, to make that interpretation.
So look, I think the question is on the table. Kim's just stated in the chat that he's on a poor internet connection, so audio isn't reliable. And while it's not exactly on topic, it's not exactly off topic too. So I think, can we hold the question and ask Kim to give us the answer on the next call and then carry on? I think... Nigel has his hand raised again, or did you just not put your hand down, Nigel?
No, as I said in the chat, I want to come back on what Chris has said. I agree with Chris. I think this is right. But we have to be explicit about what we're doing. We can't just use the word database and make it to mean the PostgreSQL relational database that registries currently use, because maybe in, again, 5 or 10 years' time, there'll be a different way of doing things. I think what we have to do explicitly, and we do have the benefit of people who've been around longer than I have and know what this stuff means, to explicitly write what it means and then say it might be reasonable in the modern context to take the following approach. But I don't believe we can go back in time and redefine... It's a question of doing the literal interpretation thing and then saying that the purpose of interpretation in the modern standard would be this. I don't want to try and pull the wool over anybody's eyes.
Yep. No, fair enough. Well, let's work on that in the glossary document at the appropriate time. Eberhard?
I agree with Chris. Framework of interpretation means we interpret what it means to us. We don't really need to interpret what it meant 2,000 years ago. The reason for this group is to determine what it means now. What it means in 20 years' time, they will make another interpretation group if necessary. You may also want to read Kim's things into the record. He's answered your question.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Eberhard. Patricio.
Yeah. There was a reply by Kim on the chat window, and basically what he says is what I supposed the answer was going to be. Basically, that requirement of database accuracy is not checked in practice. So I think it's become obsolete as a requirement.
Okay. Nigel, did you re-raise your hand, or is it still...
Well, I haven't put it down from re-raising it, but the requirement's not become obsolete. We have to continue to run the thing with accuracy and resilience. The fact is IANA does not do proactive checks. It's just something we would be judged by if we were accused of any form of negligence or misbehavior, I suppose.
Yes. Okay, I think we've achieved some clarity then. No further questions. Paulus raises the valid point in the chat that RFC 1591 does not refer to registry, but I guess we're using the word registry and CCTLD operator rather seamlessly. Anyway, if there's no, or Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
In the RFC 1591, the registry is used in a different context. It's used for the central registry and for the regional registry. It's more like the Airbus registry. It's not referring to a domain register. So I can't have that.
Okay. Okay. No further questions, Benny. Can we move on? Benny,
yes, sir.
Mute. Ah, there we go.
Section 522, RFC 1591, clearly contemplates revocation in appropriate cases involving persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain, as this above. 5221, the IANA contractor has not publicly stated the standards by which it will evaluate whether or not a manager is doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain, CCTLD, or B, there are persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain. 5222. The FOI working group believes it is consistent with the intent of RFC 1591 to avoid actions that undermine the stability and security of the DNS and or continuing operation of the domain for the benefit of the local community. 5223, FOI Working Group notes that technical operation of TLDs has greatly evolved from the time of publication of RFC 1591, along with the use of the Internet, and although still a specialized field, this is standard knowledge for networking specialists and is supported by a large volume of easily accessible documentation and applications. In addition, there are a number of service providers that specialize in performing these services under contract for CCTLD managers. 5224. The working group suggests that the CCNSO could provide implementation guidance in these areas by documenting current standards and generally accepted practices for DNS operations that have developed over time. Following appropriate consultation, such guidance could then be used as a reference point for reviewing DNS-related performance issues for a CCTLD manager. Over to you, sir.
Nigel.
Okay, I've just a comment about widget dot 2. Can we scroll back up a little bit, please? This is probably pedantry, but I think I need to put a hook down for it. 5.2 reads, the working group believes it's consistent with the intent of 1591 point that we're making. My reaction on reading that is, so what? That doesn't help. That's nothing. I would turn around and say, the working group believes RFC 1591 requires somebody to avoid action, etc. It's consistent with the intent doesn't mean anything. It just means, you could do it if you felt like it. RFC 1591 mandates that we don't do bad shit, if you pardon the expression.
Would it help if it said the FOI working group interprets the intent of RFC 1591 to avoid?
Well, if you then input, you then have to put the words to imply an obligation to. Yes, exactly.
Okay. So noted was that, I think Becky's just indicated in the chat that she agrees with just interprets, so I don't think I'm hearing any objections to that. No further questions.
Keith, it's Chris. I just raise as a point, I don't have the clauses in front of me, but I wonder whether the last paragraph, which is us, we're suggesting to the CCNSO that they should
consider doing some things actually belongs in this report, or whether it shouldn't perhaps just be a separate suggestion. I'm not sure that it's we should be making recommendations about what the CCs should do in this document. I think it's a fine thing to do. I think the CCNSO should do it. And in fact, Eberhard knows full well that we've talked about this for some time and talked about the possibility of creating such a document. But I wonder whether we should actually be putting it in this document or whether we shouldn't just deal with it separately.
I noticed Nigel agreeing strongly with Chris, and Eberhard has his hand raised. So, Eberhard.
Yeah, I mean, that goes into the direction of best practices and things which we have always avoided. And, I mean, the technical working group is going to eventually write such a document. I think it leads us down an unnecessary and dangerous path, so I think we should scrap that out of this report altogether.
Well, I'm not seeing a lot of people in agreement with that, nor am I seeing people objecting to that ever. Eberhard.
Just for the record, I formally object.
Formally object. Can you be precise in what you're objecting to?
That I formally object against the inclusion of paragraph 5.2.2.4 in any document that the working group produces.
Okay, square brackets around the whole of 5.2.2.4. Further discussion first, Martin, then Nigel. So, Martin.
Yeah, just on that particular point, I think what is coming out is a certain degree of lack of clarity as to exactly what we're meaning in the previous sections. Therefore, I would certainly not see any problems of the CCNSO initiating additional work. That it's not included in this report, I have no views about, other than I think we need to know how we might go about suggesting to the CCNSO that it does need to start thinking about it. And then I've got a separate point on the previous section, 5.2.2.3, the last sentence. I have no recollection of seeing this sentence in before. I certainly can't see what the fact that there are a number of service providers specializing in performing these services under contract adds to the section. I've got no particular objection. It just seems to me to be an unnecessary sentence and might imply that we're suggesting a particular direction for moving forward that I don't think we've agreed to. Thanks.
Okay. I think that's not unreasonable. I thought the wording of 5.2.2.4 had already been previously agreed by the group, and it's just restated here. So I'm a little surprised at the objection, but I understand it. But Nigel, what was yours?
Okay, well, I'm going to agree with nearly everybody in turn. First of all, Chris, I agree totally. Secondly, Martin, I agree with both of his points. And I'm making a proposal that we delete the last sentence of dot 3 and the entire section of dot 4 as a result.
Yep. Okay, I think there is a way forward painted by Nigel, suggested by Martin originally. So does anyone have any objection to the deletion of the last sentence of 5.2.2.3 and all of 5.2.2.4? I see Martin and Nigel both have their hands raised. I'm not sure whether that's because they've forgotten to take them down. Okay, Martin, your hand's still raised, so the floor is yours.
Thanks, Keith. Yes, I have raised it again. As I try to say 5224, I wouldn't be unhappy to see it go, apart from the fact that, like you, I thought we had agreed to this text before, and the sentiment involved needs to be captured in some other way if this paragraph is being deleted, so that the CCNSO itself decides whether this is work that should go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. So I think then the challenge is for Bernie and Becky to maybe try and work on some alternate wording or sort of an offline discussion point to raise at CCNSO level. Okay, I see Eberhard and Nigel both have their hands raised, so Eberhard.
I am unaware of having ever agreed to this. I'm not even aware of that we have discussed it in my presence. But I haven't been able to make all the meetings, but this is not part of what we're doing. This is not an interpretation, and I don't really want to have a vote on it, please. So we should just take it out, like Betty suggests.
Yeah, I think we're all agreeing it's gone. It's just Martin's raised that the issues raised in here are actually quite valuable, just has no place in this document, and so I think we shouldn't lose sight of catching the issues and discussing them with the CCNSO in due course, even though it needn't necessarily be part of the formal record of this group. So thanks, Eberhard. Nigel?
Just come in. This is exactly what I'm thinking. It's a good thing we will and we should have idea of what's on the market, what's going on, but not for this group.
Okay. Thanks, Eberhard. Nigel. Yes, Nigel, you do have the floor, but we can't hear you. Nigel? You're on mute.
Has my line been unmuted?
You are unmuted now.
Fine. I don't know what's happening now. I was pressing star 7. I want to be as concise as possible, because it seemed to we came to an agreement and consensus on this about 2 seconds after Chris put it before us. But let me just go back to the general point and the thing that I said in the chat about 5 minutes ago. The test to whether we should have a paragraph in this document or not, it's going to be long enough as it is does it interpret anything? Does it add value? If it's something that we've come across validly as the result of our work that we should be reporting back on, then by all means, let us do so by means of reporting back channels, but not in the formal document, please.
We're in violent agreement, I think, and Daniel's just indicating in the chat that it opens all kinds of cans but doesn't interpret anything. So I think there's violent agreement everywhere, and so let's remove the text but not the intent to raise a discussion point with the CCNSO.
Keith, it's Chris. There's nothing to stop us from, if we choose to do so, to sending a note to the council saying that as a side issue of the work of the working group, we believe that this is something the CCNSO should be doing. Should be discussing. We can send a separate text about that. It doesn't have to be in the report. That's the key, I think.
Yep, excellent. Nigel, you have your hand up again? No, your hand is down. So no other comments? So can we please move on, Penny?
Yes, sir. Moving on to our favorite section, 5.3, substantial misbehavior. 53.1. In addition to the operational requirements identified above, RFC 1591 identifies key requirements and necessary responsibilities of designated managers, including the requirement that there be a manager that supervises domain names and operates the domain name system in that country. The requirement that the manager be on the internet with IP connectivity to the name servers and email connectivity to the designated manager and its staff. The requirement that there be an admin and technical contact for each domain, including for ccTLDs, an admin contact residing in the country. The FOI working group interprets this requirement to mean that the manager must confirm that, and the IANA contractor must be able to validate that the administrative contact resides in the country or territory associated with the ccTLD. This establishes a clear intention from RFC 1591 that there be local in the country or territory associated with the ccTLD presence. The FOI working group recognizes that there may be extenuating circumstances where it is impractical or even impossible for the administrative contact to reside in the country or territory, or where the operator has a contract that eliminates this requirement. We'll stop. Questions, comments on 531 up and including 53131.
Fantastic. Everyone's in agreement. Or at least there's no hand
take
raised.
It and run.
53.14.
The designated manager serves as a trustee for the delegated domain with a duty to serve the nation in the case of a country code and the global internet community. It is not in italics and perfectly noted as quoted as Eberhard raised in the previous section, and yes, we will do this. 53.141. As noted in the FOI working group on consent in RFC 1591, the term trustee is used to describe the manager's duty to serve the community and not to describe the specific legal relationship of the manager to the delegated domain. Rather, the FOI working group interprets this to require the manager to, one, provide mechanisms to allow for registrants and significantly interested parties to provide input to the manager, and two, preserving the security and stability of the ccTLD and working with the IANA contract manager to preserve the stability and security of the global DNS internet. And please, let's not have the argument about the IANA contract manager use at this point. 53.14, questions, comments. Being done, we'll move on.
Yeah, no, the only comment was Eberhard asking if the document could be made movable. I don't know whether Christina did that or not. If not, could you please, Christina? There are no other questions, Bernie, so please move on.
532. RFC 1591 requires that the designated manager have the ability to carry out the necessary responsibilities described above in an equitable, just, honest, and competent manner, and gives IANA the ability to step in the event of significant misbehavior. The FOI working group interprets the requirement that the designated manager be equitable to all groups in the domain as obligating the manager to make its registration policies accessible and understandable to prospective applicants and to apply these policies in an impartial manner, treating similarly situated would-be registrants in the same manner. The FOI working group acknowledges that the IANA contractor may lack the information and context needed to evaluate the more subjective aspects of these requirements. 532, Nigel has his hand up.
Nigel.
Okay, my substantive point is 5322. What's the purpose and what's it interpreting? My non-substantive question is that the comma after and in the previous section should go.
The 5322, I think, is sort of captures the notion that gets discussed in more detail later on about, you know, who takes responsibility for sort of what, you know, sort of the softer requirements here, and whether the IAM contractor actually is in a good position to sort of legislate on what equitable behavior is. I think, as you see later, what I've done is capture what I think we agreed on, is that there are some things that should be decided, some of these softer things should be decided in country, and that, you know, the focus of the IANA contractor, whatever we call it, is the technical stability and security aspects of this.
Becky, I don't object to it at all. I'm just a little unclear as to its purpose and meaning. Maybe there's some improvements available there. I'm not objecting to it. While I've got the floor, if I could just pick up on Daniel's comment in the chat. Equitable is in the original document, and it's got to be judged with the margin of appreciation on individual countries. Nobody's suggesting that Bulgaria has to make things available in Chinese script.
Yes, the recognition of no one size fits all and local policies prevail. Thanks, Nigel and Daniel, for that point. Martin.
Thanks, Keith. The point that Nigel just made, I actually do think that this is quite an important statement, whether it belongs in 5322 or elsewhere, because I think where I get to as I start thinking this section through, there's a whole lot of activity that is associated with serving the local community, that is not necessarily, in fact almost certainly not, information that is directly and easily accessible by the IANA contract. While 5322 might need to come out from here, although I think it actually logically does belong here, I think that implication needs to be picked up at least somewhere in this document. The other point is on the preceding subparagraph, the point one, and that talks about equitable to all groups, and therefore it just takes one of the four characteristics that are referred to in that part of RSC 1591. It doesn't say anything about just, honest, or the competent manner. That leaves me sort of with the question mark, well, why? Why are we just picking on the equitability, obviously does have a serious concern for the local internet community, but so do the other qualifiers. Thanks.
Martin. Nigel, is your hand still raised, or do you have a new point? Oh, your hand's gone down. Can we? I don't know if there's a way in which we can answer Martin's point there. Any response, Becky?
Well, I think I mean, I think that we did have earlier discussion about this sort of equitable, and this is basically either the same language or a restatement of the same language. I think the fact that we don't talk about what just and honest mean is exactly the point I'm trying to make in 5322, which is it's going to be very, very hard for the IANA contractor to make those judgments.
Yes.
I mean, I don't have an objection to taking out 5321. That was really something that we had discussed previously, and obviously, you know, equitable to all groups has a wide variety of meanings because clearly, you know, a kind of a CCTLD can, you know, be closed or open, or, you know, there are a million different varieties which we all accept as perfectly fine. So even though 5322 isn't an interpretation, I think it's an important observation that informs our interpretation later on. That's the way I would describe what's going on there.
Okay, well, in that case, it is an interpretation. I mean, adding color and depth to the understanding of the policy. I see Nigel's agreeing. I'm not sure whether I think he...
I'm still putting my hand up, though.
Okay. Please continue, Nigel.
Okay. Let me just clear everything down, then I don't forget. Right, so now I don't have anything up. I'm extremely comfortable with what's in 5321. I don't object to 5322, except I found it hard to understand in context and so on. And even now I understand the purpose of it. I still don't see that it achieves the purpose that we're trying to put in, which I don't disagree with. Perhaps, again, if it was some rephrasing possible to say something like the working group notes that square bracket IANA may not be able to evaluate more subjective aspects, full stop, something like that is possible. It's much more positive. We're making an observation, and an observation is not an interpretation, but it may be valuable as an aid to interpretation.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. Eberhard?
I may have been distracted for a second, so I may have to apologize, but did Becky already explain what she actually wants to say with this paragraph? I like the way, but maybe Becky can have the floor and explain why she put this in. If she did already, I apologize. I will listen to the recording.
I think Becky did give us the point and say it was previously language that was that had been included. But anyway, Becky, do you want to respond?
Yeah, no, previously included is not, I don't understand it as a reason. Sorry, previously excluded means it was previously discussed. I just want to know again why. I like it. I'm not opposed in any way, but it may be helpful for our purposes if Becky just explains again why she put it in, what she wants to do.
Okay, so two reasons. One, it was language that that we had discussed. But more importantly, I think it was sort of when we looked at this, we thought, you know, equitable is a, you know, that's a really hard thing for the IANA functions contractor to, you know, to pass judgment on, given their information. So it has to, you know, if it means anything, it has to be something sort of more, you know, more sort of simplistic from the perspective of the role for the IANA contract. And, I mean, and we didn't include descriptions of just and honest, I think, precisely because, you know, those are really going to be subjective and contextual and all that kind of stuff, and it's not, probably the IANA contractor is not going to be in the best position to do it. As I said, I don't have a problem with taking 5321 out, but I think it was something that we all felt was a reasonable interpretation of that requirement, and we didn't come up with a reasonable interpretation of just an honest.
Okay, I think Nigel's coming up with some more alternative text in the chat room, but Nigel, I don't know, I can't scroll back for some reason just at the moment, so can you read your alternate suggestion? You'll need to unmute in order to do that.
Yeah, sorry Keith, I'm just trying to scroll back and unmute at the same time. Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. The working group notes that IANA may not be in a position to evaluate the more subjective aspects of this, and you may or may not choose to add in due to lack of information and context.
Okay. That sounds like a bit more clarity with the same intent to me. Without having to agree on the fly, Becky, any reaction?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Okay. Any objections? Okay, I think we'll substitute some alternate text there, Bernie. Martin has his hand raised. Martin.
Just a little point. I noticed the same idea about IANA's difficulty to evaluate the extent of carrying out its duties also appears in 53413. So it's just an aside. I'm quite happy to leave the text here, though.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Okay, I think we can continue, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. I believe we are at 533. Application in selection of designated managers. The working group interprets RFC 1591 to require an IANA contractor in the manager selection process to ensure that the proposed manager possesses the necessary technical, administrative, and operational skills judged by the standard of the ordinary competent TLD manager. It requires the prospective registry manager to demonstrate that he or she, or if a legal person, it, one, possesses the requisite skills to carry out the duties of a manager, skills test, and two, if designated, will have the means necessary to carry out those duties, including the ongoing responsibilities discussed above, upon receiving the appointment, executory preparedness test. 533. Comments, questions.
Doesn't appear to be any questions or comments. I just a little bit uncertain about the English when it said that he or she or if a legal person it. I would have thought if not a legal person it. But
Well, I actually do think that you know, the delegations can be to corporations, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, but isn't that it, or if not a legal person?
No, that's wrong, Keith.
Oh, am I just being...
That's a legal person is a corporation.
Yeah.
Or something that's not living, breathing person.
Yeah, I understand. It's just my dumb reading of it. Okay, Nigel has his hand raised. So, Nigel.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Bernie to give me the in on 534.
Okay, well, no further comments on 533, so let's move on. Benny.
534. Application to designated managers. although one could read RFC 1591 to limit the authority of the IANA contractor to step in during the process of selecting a designated manager. On balance, the work interprets Section 3.4 of RFC 1591 to create, one, an ongoing obligation on the designated manager to operate the CCTLD without substantial misbehavior, and two, a reserve power for the IANA contractor to step in the event of substantial misbehavior. I'm going to stop it here and take questions.
Okay, Nigel has pre-warned us. Nigel.
Okay, well, without going into this point, I still think I'm right, but I'm extremely pleased with the formulation of this, which captures the point I want to make and then shows the way the working group feels. So I'm very, very happy with this. What I'm less happy with are the English and the quotes and so on. Please bear in mind, and I'm just checking on this hypothesis for a second, but please bear in mind that the expression substantial misbehavior does not appear anywhere in RFC 1591. That may come as a surprise to people. It certainly came as a surprise to me. But that expression does not appear. It says substantially misbehaved. So putting quotes around substantial misbehavior makes it look like it's a term that, of art that's been defined in 1591 when it's not. It's something we've nouned from the verb. Let me go back to Adobe Connect, where that's gone now. The other thing is, to do something without substantial misbehavior sounds clumsy to me. It would be much better plain English, and as you know, there's a certain campaign in that regard at the moment. Without substantially misbehaving or something like that, just put plain English and leave out the quotes.
I think noted. Becky and Bernie, if they have some...
That's fine by me. I was attempting to respect as much as possible language that we had gone over, but I like Nigel, you know, would love to simplify some of these things.
Okay. And I'm not seeing any objections, so...
Can I just read what I think you should read now and see if you agree to this? So, starting from the word CCTLD on the second to last line in the paragraph, operate the CCTLD without substantially misbehaving and a reserve power for the square brackets IANA contractor to step in the event of such substantial misbehavior occurring, or something along the very similar to that.
Okay. I think Bernie will have caught that along the way.
Then we can move on.
Saying good. Okay. And I'm not seeing any objections or any other points. So can we move on, please, Bernie?
Yes, sir. This would take us to 5341. Does stepping in include the possibility of revocation? 53411. RFC 1591 identifies three formal mechanisms available to the contractor: delegation, transfer, and revocation. The FOI working group, as discussed above, interprets RFC 1591 to require the consent of an incumbent manager to any transfer of a CCTLD. If one assumes that a CCTLD manager engaged in substantial misbehavior, it is unlikely to provide such consent, and the IANA contractor's informal efforts to address such misbehavior are unavailing. The only formal mechanism that remains available to the IANA contractor is revocation. Accordingly, the working group interprets RFC 1591 to permit IANA to revoke a CCTLD delegation in appropriate cases involving substantial misbehavior. we will take questions at this point.
Okay, I see Nigel has his hand raised already. So, Nigel.
Actually, it was left over, but I was typing something. I didn't think it was important to raise my hand, but never mind. Engaged in substantial misbehaviour, it just grates on me a little bit. Why don't we just use plain English and say, who is substantially misbehaving?
I can't see any reason why not.
And I'm not going to make the point again. Can we just say that that sort of review can be done when we do a pass-through of the document, but that point that I've just made works throughout?
Yep, and Becky and Bernie have indicated their agreement with that. So, thanks, Nigel. Martin?
Perhaps a slightly pedantic point, but Section 3.4 of RFC 1591 puts the substantial misbehaviour in the past tense, not the present. So in fact, correctly, it should be who has substantially misbehaved.
I think Nigel had raised that as a point and offered the wording that changed it to substantially misbehaved. 5.3.4. So I think wait till we see version 2 of the wording, Martin, and it may be all right. If there's no other points, can we continue, Bernie?
Yes, sir. 53.4.12. Given the primary responsibility of the IANA contractor is to preserve DNS internet stability and security, the FOI working group also believes it is consistent with the purpose of RFC 1590 to interpret revocation as a last resort option to be exercised in situations where the substantial misbehavior poses a threat to the stability and security of the DNS internet or where the manager fails to cure violations of the objective requirements described above after notice. Example, no email availability. Questions, comments?
I'm not seeing any, and I guess that there's a question that arises from all of these points in as much as how Kim might interpret the actual implementation of these issues and with the workability of the analysis here. So given that Kim's on a bad line, if we could just note that we would like some comments from Kim on our next call in that regard. And I see Nigel has his hand raised, so Nigel.
Well, yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I'm not entirely sure about 1.2. Don't object to it. I don't agree with it. I'm just a bit mildly confused by it. I'd be very interested to have Kim's input. So can we say that we've taken no action on this paragraph till a meeting where Kim had an opportunity to respond and we've had an opportunity to consider his thoughts on it?
Oh, yeah. Look, I think this is reading one anyway, and
Kim said he's going to write the list. That's great.
No, I know that. And we're not going to make any decision on the basis of a single call anyway. reviewing later. Eberhard has his hand raised, so Eberhard.
With regards to Nigel not understanding, was he not involved in drafting this?
I don't know about this exact clause, but...
1.2 is not one that's familiar to me for some reason.
Anyway, Kim's offered to respond on the list, so thank you, Kim. That would be appreciated. Nigel, is your hand still up or re-raised? Thank you. So no other questions or comments. Can we move on, please, Bernie?
Yes, sir. 53.413. The FOI working group notes, however, that IANA will rarely be in a good position to evaluate the extent to which a designated manager is carrying out the necessary responsibilities of a CCTLD operator in a manner that is equitable, just, honest, or except insofar as it compromises the stability and security of the DNS/internet, a competent manner. Accordingly, the FOI Working Group interprets RFC 1591 to mean that revocation would not be an appropriate exercise of its right to step in unless the designated manager's misbehavior poses a risk to the stability or security of the DNS/internet and or the designated manager has refused to correct problems with email connectivity, presence on the internet, and or maintenance. Full stop. Questions?
So a number of hands are going up. Firstly, Martin, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Keith. This picks up on the comment I made earlier on that previous section about the difficulty of evaluation. I think where I'm sort of left a little bit in doubt is that what we're doing is in this is separating that which is globally facing from that which is nationally facing, in other words, the local internet community. This has obviously been something that has been sort of too difficult to do anything with in that this process has never been applied as far as I'm aware. And if it were, I would actually question whether it could be applied without local support or local request. And generally, I would ask a question, how on earth would IANA do this? It decides that .UK is performing substantial misbehavior. It could then come along and sort of do this. How would it do that? Without the approval of the UK government, without the approval of significant interested parties in the UK. And that, I think, has always been my problem with this section as to where does responsibility lie. And I am conscious that, having reread 1591, there is no reference in 1591 to the IANA stepping in to IANA actually having a responsibility to step in consultation with the local internet community. Now, I'm also conscious that in the overview of revocation paper that came out in November, which we all agreed was quite a significantly important paper, there was quite clearly the comments that for this local issue question, it needs to be done through national law. And so it seems to me that perhaps this this text here just needs to be bolstered in some way that makes it clear that this is something that by itself IANA can't do for the local environment, and then use the words that came in the overview of the revocation paper, or as I said before, an alternative might be to beat the overview of revocation paper into some sort of explanatory background document for this. I think inserting it here might be an easier option. Thanks.
Thanks, Martin, and I think Kim's posted a bit of clarification in the chat, It's not ever been done as a standalone act, as far as Kim knows. He can't remember the state of definitions as to whether a hostile redelegation involves a revocation, but if it is considered to, then arguably it has happened, but not been explicitly called a revocation. So I'm not sure that quite where that leaves us. There are a number of hands up, and I think Becky's third on the list, but probably has a response to Martin's point, so I'll promote Becky up the list to respond now.
Just to Martin's point, I'm not entirely certain that I understood the point, but although I do, obviously it would be unusual for INANA to do something without consultation, I feel pretty strongly that INANA has to have the right to, to stand or poll delegation if the stability and security of the internet is seriously at risk, whether or not it's consulting or whether or not it has the agreement of the relevant country. I think the reason that, that I formulated it in this way is to really clarify that this is limited to stability and security. And obviously, in the ordinary course, INANA would consult. But I at least think it would be a mistake to require consultation in serious stability and security risk situations.
Okay, thanks, Becky. Back to the speaking order. Patricio was next on the list. So Patricio, then Nigel.
Okay. About this difficulty for the INANA to evaluate this kind of misbehavior. I understand that it probably will never happen that INANA on its own will begin to inquire about the equitability or justice or honesty on part of the manager. But what might happen in practice, and it probably has happened, is that INANA receives a complaint from people in the community, for instance, that that raise the point that the manager is not behaving in the way that it should. And I wonder whether this paragraph would mean that those complaints would be dismissed by saying we were unable to evaluate them, or if there should be a procedure for investigating them.
Okay, again, that's probably straying closer to whether we are interpreting 1591 or inventing policy. So I think we've got to walk quite carefully down that line, but point well made, Patricia. Becky, is your hand still up for another point?
No, I failed to take it down.
Okay, Nigel. Yeah, Nigel.
I'm guessing you must have called for me as I was listening to the lady telling me I was off mute.
Yep.
Okay. There's one thing, and I'm quite happy and comfortable with the way of the approach on this, but there's one question that it raises here with me to do with email connectivity. It's clear that we've rightly identified the obligation in RFC 1591 that a CCTLD manager must be on the internet and must have email connectivity to the world. That was not so much of a no-brainer or an obvious thing back in 25 years ago as it is today. But with some countries and some problematic situations, this is exactly what arises. And I think, again, and I think it is part of interpretation, that we need to dig a little bit deeper and basically to look at what happens when there's an apparent failure of email. For example, you send an email to the registry manager and you don't get a response. That manager may be in a country that's involved in a civil war right then. It's not appropriate to revoke and simply redelegate just on the basis of even two or three emails that aren't responded to. I think there must be something where there's an obligation on the IANA contractor to take all reasonable steps, and that doesn't involve parachuting into a war zone, but to take all reasonable steps to make contact with the apparently uncommunicative manager.
Chief, this is Becky. I think that is exactly what the intent is, and clearly it would be inappropriate to revoke after you don't get a response to an email. But I think that you have to read the entire text together, and that's where the all reasonable, you know, a last resort, et cetera.
Okay, brilliant.
Okay, we've got clarity. I see Martin has his hand raised. So, Martin.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I'm not sure whether I heard Becky in her first intervention correctly, but it sounded to me like she said it would be a mistake to require consultation in the case of there being security or stability issues. I think one of the problems I'm feeling here is that there is a national sovereignty issue, and IANA deciding that there is security and stability issues without going through consultation would trouble me greatly, because this gets us straight into the sort of discussions we've fairly recently had through the ITU. So did I just fail to hear the not in there? And I think through the reading of 53413, I would sort of go back to the point I made earlier that we really do need to seriously consider the national sovereignty implications if we just say that IANA might be able to go ahead and do this, which is why I say I think my feeling is that we should try and capture the fact that there is working with the local internet community as part of this process, and that the sort of difficulty of, you know, how does the local internet community deal with something, that there needs to be some reference in, as there was in the overview of revocation paper. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Matt. And before I hand over to Becky to respond, I think I think Kim's guidance in this regard will be helpful when we get Kim on the call next time. So, Becky.
I think that in the ordinary course, the IANA would consult. I do think that you can conceive of situations where there is a very clear immediate danger, threat, and the need for IANA to act. And I would certainly think that where a particular CCTLD is actively endangering the stability of the internet, the interest of the global internet community would override the sovereignty interest. That's obviously a very extreme situation, but I have to say, putting in a requirement for IANA to consult in even emergency cases involving very serious threats strikes me as I just don't think that that's the right way to proceed.
Okay, thanks, Becky. And Nigel has his hand up, and then Martin again. But Nigel, if I could I, because, oh, think Nigel's taken his hand down. So, Martin.
Just picking that last point of Becky's, certainly I think I would need to understand a little bit better what the real risks might be. And secondly, I would note that in the previous paragraph we were talking about revocation in this particular case as being a last resort. So that actually in its own right does imply that other approaches have been tried and tested. And part of that approach I think really should be to try and work with the local community that eventually is the community that's going to be most heavily impacted by withdrawal of the service that is addressed to them. Thanks.
Thanks. I think Keith has to step away for a moment, so I'll fill in instead of letting us have some dead air. Good point, Martin. However, we will note that some of the points in the past, just from a factual basis, some of the CCTLDs where there was concern about substantial misbehavior, there were actually almost no registration in them. So sometimes the impact on the community is actually very light because there have been few registrations, but that's only a minor detail. I understand that. Are there any other questions or comments on 53413?
Doesn't appear to be any.
And Keith is back. I will hand it back to him.
Yep. So, well, back to you, Bernie, to carry on.
Thank you, sir. 535, getting to the actual meat of the beast at this point, defining substantial misbehavior. 5351, misbehavior. The working group interprets misbehavior in this context to refer to conduct involving the failure of a designated manager to, one, carry out the necessary responsibilities of that role, or, two, carry out those responsibilities in a manner required by RFC 1591. I'll carry on to substantial misbehavior in 5352 before taking on questions. Substantial misbehavior, the working group interprets this to involve misbehavior, as defined above, that is either egregious or persistent, and would appear to include performing the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager in a manner that imposes serious harm or has a substantial adverse effect on the local or global internet community. In this context, serious harm and substantial adverse effect should be evaluated in the context of the IANA contractor's continued focus on DNS security and stability as described in the previous section. Questions, comments?
I'm not seeing any questions. I think this is a restatement of formerly relatively agreed definition of work. So if there aren't any questions, please carry on, Benny.
Thank you, sir. Process for revocation in cases of substantial misbehavior. 536. 5361. The FOI working group also believes it is consistent with the intent of RFC 1591 to state that revocation should be the last resort option for the IANA contractor. The IANA contractor should use all means at its disposal to assist the manager to resolve any issues considered to be significant misbehavior by the manager. Revocation should only be considered if the IANA contractor reasonably demonstrates that the manager is unable or unwilling in an appropriate time frame to A, resolve specified material failures to carry out its responsibilities under RFC 1591, and or B, to carry out those responsibilities in a manner required by RFC 1591. If the substantial misbehavior undermines the stability and or security of the Internet and or a willful refusal to cure a breach of one of the objective aspects of the necessary responsibilities of the delegation is revoke the IANA contractor should use all means at its disposal to ensure the CCTLD will continue to resolve names and that a suitable replacement is identified by significantly interested parties in a manner previously described on an expedited basis. 5363. The FOI Working Group believes that it is consistent with RFC 1591 to allow a manager the right to appeal notice of revocation by the IANA contractor to an independent body. Section 3.4 of RFC 1591 states the Internet DNS Names Review Board, IDNB, a committee established by the IANA, will act as a review panel for cases which the parties cannot reach agreement amongst themselves. The INDB's decisions will be binding. Although the INDB does not exist, the text clearly establishes the intent of allowing the right to appeal decisions. The working group suggests that the CCNSO undertaking consultation with the GAC and interested stakeholders to identify further discussion possible procedures to be followed in connection with any proposed revocation of the delegation of a CCTLD based on the work of the FOI working group. These procedures should be reviewed and approved by the CCNSO as it will be responsible for monitoring these. End of section 536. Over to you, sir.
Are there any questions for Bernie or Becky at this stage? It looks like we have Martin just raised his hand. So Martin.
I don't think I'm for violently disagreeing with anybody. It's just I would notice that, it seems that in 5352 we talk about essentially the substantial misbehaviour simply being that which is related to DNS security and stability, and then subsequently we in 5362 go back into including the objective aspects of the necessary responsibilities of the delegation. I think that probably needs some internal coherence. Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. And I think Becky's typing a response on the chat at the moment. So. She's saying, yes, the objective aspects are stability and security. Which, does that answer the question fully, Martin?
Well, I guess the wording needs to be aligned, doesn't it?
Yes, okay. Noted. Okay, if there's no other questions or comments, carry on. Bernie, I think we're into the last 20 minutes of this call, and we're on to the last short piece of the document. So I'd like to see if we could make it through, but I see already Martin and Nigel have their hands raised. So firstly, Martin.
The other point that I had was on 53632. The IDNB does not exist, but the intent of allowing right to appeal decisions. But in fact, I've got a question really about, has there ever been a formal process for appealing decisions? We're saying that there was presumably the intent to do it, but if there was the intent and we never set up the process for doing it, there might be some sort of question about how good our intent really was.
I think that you raise a very valid point, Martin, and I don't think we know the answer, but it's a question we should pose to Kim to test his knowledge. you know, it is, so we'll put the question to Kim in due course. I mean, there's never been a statement by the ICANN board that there has been a revocation per se. But you know, it'd be interesting to have further information. Kim's actually saying on the chat, only implicitly ICANN has an ombudsman board reconsideration process, etc. I guess the point in that, though, too, is that the ICANN board is the decision-maker and the appeals body unless you go via an ombudsman methodology, but that doesn't necessarily reverse the ICANN board's decision. So I have always taken the concept here to mean that there should be an appeal court or an alternate to the initial decision maker of IANA. Anyway, I think that probably does deserve a bit more work. I see, firstly we have Nigel, then Martin again. So Nigel.
Actually, again, I agree with Martin, and my point was around 3.2. We've got to be careful that we don't spend the rest of this time, we're all a bit tired, going around in circles on this. It deserves attention all of its own, and maybe the outcome of the working group is to identify that the CCNSO needs to attend to this area. I'm going to make a couple of points, though, and sort of, again, as hooks to the future. The IDNB does not exist. I'm sorry, I disagree with that. It does exist. It's in RFC 1591, therefore it exists. It has never convened, and it's very unlikely to convene. And it's a matter of speculation as to what John Postel would have convened had he ever convened one. But my expectation is that it was probably going to be something like the matter of internal review within the Freedom of Information Act in England. In other words, you have a decision maker who makes a decision. If you're not happy with the decision, you ask for an internal appeal. And the internal appeal would maybe be made by a senior official in the same organization. That's kind of equivalent to what ICANN has under reconsideration. But it's also very clear that natural justice demands that there be a right of appeal to an independent and impartial tribunal. So there's work that the CCNSO can usefully do in the area of possible revocation proceedings. Interpreting RFC 1591 doesn't get us there. I think what we need to say is just replace the text does not exist by has never been convened. And I'm happy with that.
Okay. I don't think that will have any objections. In fact, Becky's saying that's okay. So back to...
Case, that's Chris. Okay. Sorry. I understand Nigel's point, but it's problematic, I think. By suggesting that it has never been convened, then you are implying that there is already a method for convening it, and I don't believe there is. What I think we should be doing is suggesting that the CCNSO should, or the CCTLDs generally, if you don't like the CCNSO, should grasp the responsibility for saying what it should be and how it should be convened. Which I suspect we can really only do if we say it doesn't exist as of now. Otherwise, you have to say who will convene it, and that's currently not, as far as I know, said anywhere. I'd prefer us not to be making the fine point that it does exist but hasn't yet been convened, because I don't think that's a benefit to us.
Okay, look, I think Becky's indicating on the chat that she thinks this can be finessed. Can we leave this to one side at the moment?
Yes, I think we can, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, noting that there is an issue, let's park it for the meantime. Since we have Section 5.4 to finish the document and only really 10 minutes left to do that, and I'd like to get a reading of the document, noting that we still have some issues in that regard. So, Bernie, can we move on to 5.4?
Yes, sir. Process to revoke a delegation, 5.4. As discussed above, revocation should only be considered if the IANA contractor reasonably demonstrates that the manager has engaged in substantial misbehavior as defined in Section 5.24, which persists despite the efforts of the IANA contractor using all means at its disposal to resolve such conduct. If the substantial misbehavior undermines the stability or security of the DNS internet or a willful refusal to cure one of the objective key requirements and necessary responsibilities of designated managers, the revocation may be appropriate. If the delegation is revoked, the IANA contractor should use all means at its disposal to ensure the CCTLD will continue to resolve names and that a suitable replacement is identified by significantly interested parties in the manner previously described on an expedited basis. The FOI Working Group believes that it is consistent with RFC 1591 to allow a manager the right to appeal a notice of revocation by the IANA contractor to an independent body. And lastly, the Working Group suggests that the CCNSO undertake in consultation with the GAC and other interested stakeholders to identify for further discussion possible procedures to be followed in connection with any proposed revocation of the delegation of a CCTLD based on the work of the FOI Working Group. Over to you, sir.
Okay, thanks, Bernie. And Becky has her hand raised. So, Becky.
Yeah, I just want to say, as I'm looking at this, I don't think that this section should be separated from 5.3 because so I don't think it should be a separate 5.4. It should be a process to revoke a delegation for substantial misbehavior. That's just a note because Nigel, I know, is going to pick that up.
Okay. Not so far, Nigel hasn't, but Martin has his hand raised. So, Martin. Martin, you must be still on mute.
Hello?
That's better.
Oh, right. Okay. Obviously, it was slow coming off mute. But, one very small point, in 5.4.1, there's a defined in section 5.4, which I don't think actually exists above, so that's obviously just a cut and paste mistake. More important, if there is, then I've missed it. Yeah?
Yes, you're right, there's no 5.2.4.
Yeah. I don't know whether it is appropriate here. I actually think it is. That in 5.4.1 and 5.4.2, I think there should be some reference to the views or working with the local internet community, taking into account that there might be crisis reasons for working more quickly and if possible. But certainly I would expect this to be done in conjunction with the local internet community. Bearing in mind that the delegation is supposed to be serving that local internet community. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Martin, and I see Becky's already indicating on the chat that she's agreeing with you and is okay with that. So I think some clarity could be gained around that. Okay, if there's no other questions... Oh, it's Martin.
Yes, it suddenly occurred to me the point that Becky made, that this one process to revoke a delegation just refers to substantial misbehaviour. We're saying that that process would be different from a process to for revocation for persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain under 3.5. Because it wouldn't seem to me necessary to be particularly logical, but that's probably because I don't understand Becky's reason for separating those two.
It's just, I mean, you could have a separate process to revoke a delegation, but the 541 that we talk about, substantial misbehavior, you know, we also have the persistent problems discussion above, so I just need to clarify that this is not overturning what we talked about in 5.2.
Okay. Okay. Well, look, it occurs to me after the discussion tonight that we actually have a document that probably is more capable of being agreed to than our former text. And I stand to be corrected. If anyone wants to object to that supposition, please indicate your objection. But I think we might have a way forward without having anything agreed tonight. I think we probably can continue to finesse this to the point that we will have all parties in agreement. And that is my hope, of course. Did someone just say something? I don't understand that word, but anyway. So, look, thank you all for trying so hard, and I think we have made some very useful progress and perhaps got a bit of a breakthrough here. So, Bernie and Becky, we've got quite a bit of work ahead of us to do some redrafting and get some clarifications. Kim, I think we've got a number of questions for you to respond to on the list. Our next meeting is scheduled for the 7th of March at UTC 1900, so I think with that in mind, that's 2 weeks away. We have two more meetings, the 7th of March and the 21st of March, before going to Beijing, so I'd really like to see if we could, during those two meetings, get through this whole topic of revocation and substantial misbehaviour. So thank you all for your participation. Unless there's anything else, I think the time's come to draw the meeting to a conclusion. So, nothing else. Thank you all, and a good day or a good night or a good morning to you wherever you are. Thanks for your contributions and valuable input into this. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.